Film Nerds Unlimited. Lo-fi movie conversations with high-quality movie connoisseurs. Issue 69. Ben Stark of Wondermill Films. Ben Flanagan of Aspect Radio.
How you doing, Ben?
Ben, I'm great. How are you?
I'm pretty fantastic. I'm a little bit light on sleep because last night I went to see Creed and didn't get out until about 10 o'clock and couldn't go to sleep for another hour because I was so hyped up and then had to get up early this morning. You saw Creed this afternoon, right? What did you think?
You know, I thought it was really, really good. I really did. And, you know, you and I are big fans of this franchise, and this is exclusively part of the Rocky franchise. And I guess we could call this the sixth sequel in the series, and I guess the seventh movie overall. So, I mean, you have jokingly referred to it as Rocky 7, but you would consider it that, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's there's less argument for that than I thought there would be. I only watched the first trailer, and I thought that this was going to be kind of almost incidentally a Rocky movie, and Rocky would be the very peripheral character, but he ends up being basically the co-lead, which I thought, you know, that when you're dealing with Sylvester Stallone could be a good or bad thing. I think in this case, I think it ended up being a very, very good thing, and this is definitely not just a Rocky movie. I think it's a really great sequel directly to Rocky 3 and 4. Where the, you know, Rocky-Apollo relationship really comes together.
Yeah, it feels way more like a Rocky movie than Rocky Balboa does, right? Like, that just, you know, and say what you want about Rocky V, I understand the vitriol against it, but, I mean, in ways it felt like a part of the universe, you know? Like, I mean, it just sort of had the same visual design, you know, the music, other than some bad instances of not so appropriate 90s-ness to it, early 90s-ness. But for me, I mean, it still kind of felt like a Rocky movie. In Rocky 6, Rocky Balboa, just not much really worked about it for me. And I just thought that it was mainly because of Sylvester Stallone, obviously, whose fingerprints are all over this thing. I mean, he's kind of the George Lucas of the Rocky Star Wars universe, right? Like, it's his baby. And, you know, I'm not going to pretend like I know more about the Rocky character than the Rocky himself, Sylvester Stallone. I mean, it's probably, obviously, his favorite character, even though he's all about keeping franchises basically on the respirator as long as they need to live, you know, as long as it benefits him. But I think for the most part, he really handles them with care. And the same is true for this. But bringing a guy like Ryan Coogler, who made Fruitvale Station and established himself as a really terrific young new voice in movies, I think says a lot about what they wanted to do with this. I mean, I think Ryan Coogler is pretty clearly an auteur according to his debut. So I thought for a minute, I was a little disappointed that this would be his next movie, but when I learned that he would have a lot of creative control and he'd be working with Michael B. Jordan again, I got excited about it. But, you know, I think your and my probably primary concern going into this was just how much of Sylvester Stallone's creative fingerprints would be all over this movie, because we've seen in the recent past, and pretty much throughout his entire career, let's be honest, it can go badly sometimes when that happens. And I think that there are elements of that in Creed, for sure, and we can talk about those in a little bit, but for the most part, I think this movie does exactly what it has to do and does it really well and really makes the franchise proud in a way. I think you can compare this to something like Jurassic World, and we've talked about this ad nauseum on this podcast before, but instead of making a great Jurassic World movie, they ended up just paying homage over and over and over for the 2.5-hour running time to the first movie instead of keeping their eye on the prize. I think the opposite is true for Creed. I think they make a great Rocky movie.
Yeah, and I think they do something original, too. You know, they find this character that's interesting, and they let the movie rest heavily on his shoulders. And going forward, I feel like, you know, the story of Adonis Creed is as compelling as the story of Rocky Balboa. So I think that, yeah, it kind of is the best case scenario, I think, for, you know, if you're going to continue this series, here's a great way to do it. I like Rocky Balboa, the movie, a lot. But I agree, it's very low key. You know, it's a kind of a quiet movie, and it is directed in a more, I don't know, a more eclectic kind of way where there's a lot of shifts. It's almost like, I mean, you know, he did a lot with rapid editing and camera tricks and stuff in the, especially Rocky 3 and 4, which he directed and are two of the best, you know, movies in the franchise as far as I'm concerned. So I think he kind of took that into the Final Cut Pro era of editing with Rocky Balboa and kind of went over the top. So I can see there being a visual disconnect with the other movies there for you, but I do like that movie, but I don't think there's any comparing the director of Rocky Balboa with the director of Creed. I think in one case you've got an older guy that is looking to modestly revisit one of his favorite characters and, you know, make a solid movie. And I think in this you have got a young guy that is on fire and wants to prove himself, wants to tell this story the best way he possibly can visually and through performances. And I was blown away by Ryan Coogler's work here. Before we go any further, we're going to spoil not just moments of the movie. We might spoil some big moments. We're going to get into plot stuff probably. But early on in the movie, there's a scene where Adonis's future foster mother visits him, it's Apollo Creed's wife or widow, and she tells him that you know, she was married to his dad, and she would like him to come live with her. And there's this shot; it's a close up of the boy's fist. It's been clenched the whole scene, and the fist unclenches, and the camera pans over to his face, and he asks what his dad's name was, and it cuts to the title card. And from that moment on, I was like, "Oh man, this." This director knows exactly what he's doing. He is he knows exactly how to tell the story, and he cares about not just the character here, but the themes and what his shots are doing and what the editing is doing. And through the end, I mean, it's one of those movies where there are plenty of I won't say plenty. There's not an awful lot, but there's a few little hiccups here and there where it kind of ruffled my feathers. A little bit, but it's kind of like what we talked about with James Bond movies, where by the end of this movie, that final act, there were so many shiny, bright spots that I could not bear to see any of the little flaws in the middle. I'm curious to hear what some of those issues you had with it were, because the further I get away from this movie, which it's not been even a full day. But I'm really kind of I'm pretty high on it and on the experience I had in the theater.
Yeah, well, I am too. I really am. And guy, when you talk about the opening title card and that like swell of brass that plays as it just slowly fades up, it is just really a big moment that is totally earned, and I absolutely love that. And you're absolutely right too that it's clear that Ryan Coogler wanted to make this movie. You know, like he didn't just sign a contract and say, okay, I'll take the hit check.
I hit the big time. Yeah.
Yeah. I think he retains the auteur status with this movie, and his fingerprints are in this way more than Stallone's. And, you know, I'd love to focus more on the stuff that I really enjoyed about it. But, you know, a problem that we've had with these franchises is compromising the integrity of the mythology that, you know, just moments of that we've seen in recent memory and potential for that in studio announcements that certain projects are being made with the specific angles that they're going for just sort of frustrates you as a rule, you know? And
yeah.
There's a little bit of that in this. I think that it's just been kind of a lingering thing in the franchise ever since, I don't know, about halfway through the franchise when the character Rocky himself started to evolve into something a little bit different. And that's probably most apparent in Rocky III, where he just becomes a different person entirely,
yeah,
in terms of like his intellect and his attitude, and it just kind of there. It's more of a reflection of Sylvester Stallone, I think, than Rocky Balboa, the one,
yeah,
that he at least carved out in the first two movies. Which, and here's the thing, I think that there's an argument to be made for Rocky Balboa as one of, if not the best movie characters in history, right? Like,
yeah.
There's an argument. There's an argument out there. I'm not saying that he is or isn't, but he's certainly one of my favorites. And that has been true for every single one of these movies. I mean, there are moments where I'm just like, you know what? Most of the time, I have the feeling Rocky's just a great guy. Like, he still has that underdog status. He has that just unflinching positivity, likability. And that's true in this movie, too. I mean, for the most part, I think that this felt like the Rocky from the first couple of movies more so than it did in Rocky, three and four and Rocky Balboa. And I love three and four, don't get me wrong, but my favorite line of the movie, probably a moment of the movie, is when Rocky is taking Adonis Creed to this inner city gym instead of training at Mickey's gym.
Yeah.
And as they're walking in, they see a motorcycle fly by and popping a wheelie. And that comes into play later. And Adonis asks Rocky, like, what's the deal with that? And he's like, I don't know. It's just like, they're just popping wheelies and stuff. And Adonis says, do you have a bike? Do you ride a bike? And he goes, I used to have a Harley, but, I crashed it, and then I decided to use my feet, you know? And I was like, that is just pure Rocky, man. Like, that's just one of those lines he would have dropped on Adrian while they were walking on the ice in the first movie, you know? And I love that we got little flourishes of that throughout the movie, but I still think, and there are reports that Sylvester Stallone did, he walked over the script just a little bit, and, you can tell that he probably had a little brandishing in terms of, how there was a little Stallone polish on some of these monologues and moments where he obviously loves the idea of Rocky and sort of lets that trickle into the actual character and person that he created. He lets a lot of the idea of Rocky flow out of the mouth of Rocky during these monologues. And that's never more apparent in Rocky Balboa when he's giving the "it's not how hard you hit, it's how hard you get hit" speech in that movie. There's a little bit of that in this, especially as Creed is getting ready to fight the climactic fight against Pretty Ricky Conlan. And, that to me is when the movie gets a little clunky at times, but there are way more of those good Rocky moments than bad ones.
Yeah, I don't know. All that stuff worked for me because, again, like in Rocky Balboa, when he gives that speech, these are things that are coming from the character's experience. When he says it's not about how hard you hit, it's about how hard you can get hit and bounce back. That could be a reference to him losing Adrian. In this movie, he talks about looking in the mirror and that's your opponent, and your opponent in the ring is merely an obstacle between you and the opponent that's inside you. And that could be, a reference to the really dumb stuff that he does in Rocky II. And I feel like some of that stuff, it kind of seems like you're saying that they come across as like Stallone yearbook quotes that he's putting in the movie to be clear. But I don't see it that way. I think they're awesome quotes, but I think that they totally work as character moments. And they're some of my favorite parts of both of these movies. So those lines work for me, but I do think that there's one line in particular that I didn't know Stallone, blessed the screenplay. but now that totally explains this one line where Adonis takes a picture of his training regimen and then doesn't take the piece of paper. And Rocky says, well, what if you lose your phone? And Adonis says, it's in the cloud. And then he points to the sky and Rocky looks up at the sky confused. That is the worst moment in the movie. It's a really, really dumb joke that not only is it not necessary, it's just so on the nose. Like, why would this guy talk about the cloud?
Yeah.
Why would It was just, I couldn't believe they spent that much time on it. It's a tiny little moment, but it still just didn't work at all. And it just stands out as this moment of cheese in an otherwise pretty straightforward and humorous movie. But at the same time, it is, you know, all the other Rocky movies have their fair share of little kind of cheesy moments like that. So
like a talking robot?
Like a talking robot.
Well,
yeah. So I give it a pass.
It's funny you mention that, though, because I think that was kind of like a sort of like teaching moment, right, in terms of the Rocky character and what the – because, like, if you're going to have that joke in there, and this is kind of like it reminded me of Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, right, where he swings – there's that, you know, opening action sequence in, like, the cargo area or whatever, the warehouse.
Right.
He swings back into – the front seat of a Jeep or a truck or whatever.
Right.
And, you know, original trilogy Indiana Jones wouldn't have said a word. It would have been physical comedy. There would be no dialogue. But in that moment, he says something like, damn, that hurt, you know? And it's
yeah.
just like, wait, what? And then with this, I thought that had the old Rocky would have just, like, looked up in the sky at the clouds as Adonis walked away instead of also saying, cloud, what cloud?
Oh yeah, I forgot he even said that.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, that so, it's such a weird choice to have him actually go through and actually say that.
Right. So I mean, they're just yeah, that whole joke could have just lost that completely.
I mean, I think that look, the joke would have worked if he'd walked away and said, "What if you lose your phone?" And then Adonis said, "Oh, it's backed up," and pointed at the sky. And then it cut to Sylvester Stallone looking up at the sky, like. What the hell do you mean? It's backed up. What's up there?
Yeah,
like
I think cloud
that
jokes
would have totally played. But yeah, it's
cloud
ahead.
Jokes are just kind of off limits now. You know, it's
yeah,
just like
yeah.
just, we don't need that. It's like when I see you know Tomorrowland and this happens in so many movies, but you cut to like a million people holding their phones up and
yeah.
recording something all at the same time. What a
it's
major
like,
commentary on humanity and their dependence on technology. You know what I mean? Like, who cares? Like,
I just watched Terminator 5, and there's the whole you know, there's a operating system that is a big part of that movie. And whenever that kind of hit, I was like, oh god, we're going to talk about iOS. Is this Tron? You know, it felt very yeah. Any stuff like that severely dates. Dates a movie, but then again, you think about it, and what Rocky movie isn't severely dated the week after it comes out? You know, I mean, that's kind of the charm.
Yeah,
sometimes
it's usually the music that dates it, but you know,
right. or the talking robot.
Exactly, that may or may not be the case for this. I happen to think the music is actually really good in this movie, and you know, I don't know how much of it is original versus you know, for instance, that we can talk a little bit about the Tessa Thompson character, who Bianca,
yeah.
who.
Yeah.
Who I think is a really good character, and she's a musician, and I just found myself kind of surprised. Like, there are moments where you hear samples of music that she writes and performs, and I just remember thinking, you know, the icing on the cake here is that this music's actually really interesting and, like, really, you know, really good, and so that was nice for me, and I don't know if that was actually, there's a, you know, sequence where it kind of fades into what might be the actual track that was written, but, no, but, I mean, I hate to get away from Adonis Creed, who I think is a really well-developed character. And to me, that's what's so important with this franchise is there's such a great loyalty to the Rocky character and maintaining, again, his overall integrity and keeping him likable and keeping him the underdog even when he's on top of the world and throwing these obstacles in his way that only he can overcome with his very specific and, like, unparalleled will and determination, right? I think that a little bit of that is lost in terms of, like, the primary development of the Adonis character in that we could connect with Rocky, like, right away, right? From, like, the first fight and, like, post-fight moments in the first movie where he's fighting Spider Rico in that, like, rundown church gym or whatever, and you just get – they just paint such a great portrait of just – you know, to use the Rocky buzzword, a bum, right, who is fighting to survive and is a good guy who happens a good just, like, sweet guy who happens to be good at fighting. And, you know, with Creed, I think that you get a payoff late in the movie. It's really late in the movie that doesn't really have. Yeah, it doesn't really have a big setup, and you don't really understand what's really driving Adonis Creed here. And so you don't really latch on the same way, because what they give you is it's a rich kid who happens to be privileged, who did have to fight his way for a few years, certainly, you know, in and out of foster homes and juvie and all that. But then he gets taken in and lives through the benefits of his dad's fortune, right? And so he feels, you know, the whole point of this is that he has to make his own legacy. He has to prove himself. But I just didn't get as much of a sense of, okay, let's root for this guy, the underdog, as I did Rocky.
Absolutely not. And I think that's totally intentional. I think that's I think that's probably one of Ryan Coogler's goals with this movie, is to say that, look, here we have at the beginning, this kid is kind of scary. I mean, this kid is really good at beating people up. And when he becomes an adult, he softens a little bit thanks to, you know, a good influence from his foster mother. But he's still brash, and you see this violence and anger. It's, I mean, this kid could have been Jake LaMotta, you know. And I think I think what Ryan Coogler is kind of trying to say is, when you have these, you know, in some cases illegitimate children that feel like they're not wanted, what choice do they have in life but to act out and be angry and you know, say F the world. And all that they need is a channel. All they need is positive reinforcement. All they need is family. And I think that that's huge, and I think that's something that our culture needs to pay attention to. And I think that it's different, you know, it's different now than in the 70s. In the 70s, you know, it was, you know, the economy was bad, and it was tough, and people had to fight kind of to get a simple job. And now there's elements of that in our culture too, but there's also a huge element of people that are way worse off than that. And not just, they don't have to fight economic disparity or educational disparity. They have to fight something within themselves that they feel like has been planted there. And I feel like that's something that's, it's very, very, very different than what Rocky was trying to do. But I think that's great. I think if they had just, you know, if they had just made this an urban Rocky or something like that, it would have been really disingenuous and really insulting, but they didn't. They went with something that it's timely, it's unique, and you go back to the her music being interesting. And there's also it's a very specific movie. You know, it's very specific with the culture of Philadelphia and African Americans and youth culture. It's very specific with these things. In a way that you don't usually get in a giant MGM, you know, blockbuster Thanksgiving release. It just feels like a really small, intimate movie.
Well, yeah, I agree. I totally agree. And everything you said is right. And I like the contrast, you know, that you have here of, like, spoiled rich kid who has to prove himself, as opposed to Rocky, who had nothing and was who won the lottery, essentially, and had to, you know, prove himself to himself without, you know, really worrying about, like, the burden of the world watching him do that, you know. And I just kind of wish that, just strictly from a story standpoint, they had kind of planted the seed of what you're talking about, and that emotional payoff that we do get with one really effective line from
I think if you movie. Well, with the line you're talking about is he needs to prove to himself that he's not a mistake, basically.
Yes.
Right, that he's
yes.
not just this illegitimate mistake.
Yes.
from Carl Weathers. Which I would love to be that. I don't know. I feel like that moment is that may be the moment where the hype just, like, took me to the next level, where I was like, oh man, this is not just working on a textural level. It's also working on, like, a totally emotional level.
Well, it's like
it is, but I feel like but it is set up. It's just not set up in dialogue. It's set up in so many things that he does. He's the way he responds to, you know, the name and the sensitivity to the name and it's like a push and pull distance that he has, with being in the shadow of his dad. Sometimes he seems comfortable with it, sometimes he doesn't, and it's because he doesn't feel like he belongs there, and even if he belonged there, he doesn't know if he wants to be there. And I feel like it is complex. It's not simple, and it's not set up in, you know, really in any dialogue. I'll give you that. But I do think it's set up in character action, in the way this guy lashes out, the way this guy treats other people, and the way this guy tries to be significant, you know. He tries to be significant by being violent, by making a mark, by being brash and throwing his weight around. And I feel like that, if you're illegitimate or you feel yourself to be illegitimate or a mistake, then the best shot you have is to make a mark. And I feel like physically that's something that's set up in the movie.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that moment in the moment feels really earned, because like this movie is, if you don't get emotionally invested in this movie, then you got problems, you know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah.
And
your heart's not
beating. Yeah. With what happens to Rocky, especially, it's like, again, you talk about a movie character that we are just organically emotionally invested in. It's Rocky Balboa, right? Like, and we don't want bad things to happen to him. I'll tell you, like, I thought that Sylvester Stallone, I think he deserves a lot of credit in terms of his acting, and obviously Coogler, again, with his direction. But there are, like, little moments when Rocky's by himself, when he visits Adrian and Polly's grave, when I thought, wow, this is just an amazing little moment here, and it's letting Stallone flex his muscle as an actor in a way that we haven't really seen since those Rocky movies, you know? And it made me miss those characters that he's visiting, Adrian and Polly, a lot, and I thought it was just a really wonderful homage to the Rocky franchise that kind of was before it evolved into what it's become, and I don't think that the movie ever loses sight of that while it's trying to tell its own story, and that's probably, again, I mean, you talk about the whole movie being about make your own legacy, right? I mean, that's essentially what Creed is doing, the movie, you know, in terms of, you know, not necessarily escaping the Rocky franchise necessarily, but to be its own movie and to be its own man, essentially, the same way that Adonis is working through his issues with Apollo. And, you know, and I think that it's as successful as its character is, you know. Here's one of the issues that I do have with this movie and Rocky Balboa and really Rocky V too, is, you know, Sylvester Stallone, he obviously falls for athletes, you know, and people who are actually professional fighters. I mean, you look at Tommy Gunn, and you look at the Mason the Dixon line or whatever from
right.
And you look at Randy Couture in the Expendables movies, where it's just like he's so into like what these guys are capable of physically that he's like, I gotta put him in the movie, right? Just to show them off and to show everybody what I see. And the same is true about this pretty Ricky Conlon guy, where it's like he has like fun little moments, but I just found myself watching it and just being like, quit casting real boxers. You know, like,
is he a real boxer?
Yeah.
I mean,
he is.
I was actually captivated by him. He was, I think he had a really intimidating screen presence. He has this weird,
he's a real boxer.
Well, yeah. Okay. Well, that it totally sells. And
it sells the boxing, I guess, but
no, yeah, I felt like he, in those scenes when he's like at the press conference, when he's just like staring a hole through Adonis. I mean, I felt it was way more impactful than
he's
making the line.
He's good at it, but that's not earned from a character standpoint. It's just not. And you look back,
I mean, no.
You look back at the first four Rocky movies, and you can identify with, or you can either identify with or just simply identify all of the antagonists, right? Like, Apollo Creed is a flesh and blood character in those first two movies. Clever Lang and Ivan Drago are brilliantly developed.
If you're asking a movie to create a better villain than Clever Lang, then I think movies may as well give up trying to create villains because they already created Clever Lang.
Right, but
he's perfect.
The point here is that those characters have a lingering, ominous presence throughout those entire movies until we get to that last moment. And maybe the point of this movie is not so much the actual fight that he actually engages in during the climax, and it's all about the fight we've been talking, the internal struggle that we've been talking about here, but the same is definitely true for Rocky in those sort of internal struggles that he faces in those first four movies before he actually goes toe-to-toe with these opponents. But that being said, those opponents still are fleshed-out characters, and I just don't think the same is true for either of the boxers in Rocky Balboa or this. I mean, would you agree with that?
I mean, I can't really argue because I can't even remember the name of the guy in Creed, but I do. And no, they're definitely not as strong as Clubber or Apollo or Drago. But
and so the
I mean,
fight takes less meaning. Like, and it's all about.
I don't think so because I feel like, despite I don't know him as a character, but I do feel like there is a palpable sense of danger before the fight. Like, I really felt like this guy is kind of a loose cannon. He's, you know, there's the jail aspect. I think the performance that his manager gives is really good. He's one of the hobbits from The Hobbit. One of the dwarves, or rather. I feel like, it was really effective. But, yeah, I mean, I'll concede that. I mean, Drago is hard to compare because that movie is so much more cartoonish than this movie in all the right ways. So I don't know if they could have even attempted for that. And even Clubber Lang is a bit of an over-the-top character. I'm not sure if they could have gone there. And they were doing so much else in this movie. You know, I think you would have had to sacrifice the love story, really, if you were going to give more time to a fully three-dimensional villain.
I think that aspect of the movie suffered as a result of that. And like you said, I mean, they may be cartoonish, but they're real characters. Like, they're breathing up there, you know? And you're
scared
of them.
It depends. Every movie doesn't need to have a three-dimensional villain. Every movie needs to have a sense of stakes and danger, and I don't feel like that was sacrificed at all. It was.
Well,
I think, but
I kind of disagree with you because, I mean, if you're going to build up to this fight the way that you do, and you're going to just suddenly, I mean, it's kind of like when he meets with Conlon's manager, right, and they have that meeting in Adrian's where he's basically just like, look, he needs a fight. Can you, and that's kind of what this, it feels like the movie's doing the same thing. It's like, oh, wait, we need a fight in this movie. So let's go ahead and rush this real quick so that through the ring, he can, you know, come to terms with his identity and his legacy that he's attempting to build. You know what I mean? And that aspect of it, the actual boxing itself, not the training, because as we know, training montages rule in this franchise, and the same is true in this. To me, that's where it just fell a little bit short. But they got everything else pretty spot on.
I think I still disagree because they set up who the champ was so early in the movie. And again, there was that sense of danger. Again, I didn't know who he was as a person, but I felt like there was an impeding sense of doom every time you talked
about
it.
There's a personal vendetta, though, in the other movies. Like, forget Rocky Balboa and... Again, I'm basically talking about the first four movies, but you can sense a personal vendetta, you know, between Rocky and his antagonists in the ring. Anyway, like there's a connection of some sort that I don't think this movie really seeks between Adonis and the Conlon character. And you know, I hate to get so hung up on this because, I mean, we don't want to lose sight of the real struggle, but. I don't know. Like to me, I think you have to have that. You just do.
Again, though, this is going to be different. This is a different antagonist with more demons than Rocky ever had. And I mean, if you're right, then it still speaks to the theme of the movie, which is that his opponent isn't, you know, this other boxer. His opponent is himself.
Right.
So I feel like
they explicitly say that before he even walks into the ring, you know?
Right. And it's also set up nicely in a little visual scene where Stallone literally puts him in front of a mirror. But I think that from the beginning, it's the little kid fighting with himself to open up to this lady. And I think that's the theme of the movie. And if it takes an obstacle. I mean, that's exactly how Rocky describes the champ is as an obstacle. He's an obstacle in the way of you fighting yourself.
Right.
And I feel like if that's, you know, that I think the movie bears that out and it doesn't bother me. And it certainly never bothered me in the movie. Like, yeah, I would, you know, this is your arguments. I don't dismiss. And the only reason I don't dismiss them is because you're making me think about them now, but that is certainly, it didn't occur to me once in the movie. I was so wrapped up in what was happening, especially in the ring. Part of it because of how Coogler was shooting everything. I mean, the final fight is not a long take, but there's a major fight in the middle of the movie that's all one take, and it's the way it whoops back and forth and hops back and forth. The camera is basically, it like focuses on the guy who's doing better. Like, so the camera is kind of picking sides. And it's fantastic. And I feel like he carries a lot of that energy into that final fight. And I think we're probably going to have to wrap up pretty soon.
Well,
I'll say one thing and then I'll let you go. I'd be remiss if I didn't mention one of the most amazing moments in a movie this year, which is, in the final fight, Adonis is knocked cold. He's on the mat and the 10 count is happening and the camera is kind of slowly crawling into him. And there's these flashes of people in his life. There's, you know, there's Rocky, there's his girlfriend, there's his foster mom. And then there's a flash of a shot from, you know, Rocky 2 or 3 or something like that of Apollo. And it cuts back to Adonis's face, and he gives this like sharp inhale and pops up off the ring. And one of the great things about the Rocky movies is the editing. And I feel like it was Coogler, you know, putting his stamp on the movie and saying like, yeah, I'm going to use editing the way that Stallone would have used it in Rocky 3 or 4. And I'm going to punch this emotion using every tool I have at my disposal. And it's a fantastic visual moment. And it's one of those that almost made me jump up and just like knock over something nearby.
No, I agree. It's a great moment. It kind of reminded me of a moment similar in the movie Snatch when Brad Pitt is a boxer. There's a boxing sequence in that. I mean, it is, there are similarities.
It's a bit more emotional.
Yeah, a little bit, but I tell you what, like to sort of contrast that and to contrast the style that we're used to at these Rocky movies, there's just a sequence that is just beautifully done and staged and executed where it's the first fight, the first like legitimate fight that Adonis Creed fights in the United States that is all one take.
That's what I was talking about. Yeah.
I thought you were talking about that's the second fight that you're talking about.
No, I'm talking about the first fight that he has with the trainer's son.
Oh, well, when he gets knocked down and he's on the, that's when he's fighting Conlon at the end.
No, yeah, that's that moment. But before that, I was talking about the way that he shoots the fight in the middle of the movie.
Yeah.
That's all long thing.
Okay, yeah. I must have totally zoned out, and I was just getting hung up on it. No, you're exactly right. Like, that whole long take is just amazing. And, you know, I love that sequence, and it's a great character-building moment. But I don't really love how the final fight is shot. And it's this unfortunate influence of modern boxing and how it's basically owned by HBO and Showtime, and their presence is, it's unavoidable in real life, but I just don't think you really have to steep Rocky in real life. You know, like that kind of.
Oh, nothing about that felt real. It felt
well,
so
The way they shoot the fight is kind of like how the fighter, like they made a big deal about, we used the HBO cameras and we shot it like they would shoot it. There are moments like that. I mean, there's even the HBO logo in the bottom right, you know.
Oh, right. Yeah. Well, that
frame
that's,
where it's just like, let this go. Like, and I know that you can see, like, the USA logo on the mics by the ringside announcers commentating on the fight in Rocky IV, but I don't know, I don't need for this to feel like it's rooted in realism the same way, like, Nolan's Batman movies were, you know what I mean? Where it's just like, just let Rocky, I just prefer the way they were shot in those first several movies, and I didn't think, and again, this is different, and, you know, but, you know, in reality, this is Rocky VII, let's be honest, and I just don't really think that going for that level of realism, it was a little more distracting than anything. It's like, that's great that you made the HBO or Showtime 24/7 fake documentary about these two boxers, and, you know, that was fun, and you have the little moment where he's watching it on his iPad, but to me it's just kind of a little too winky in a way.
Yeah, that's all just exposition, you know. That's they needed some way to get that information across, and that's fine. I mean, in terms of exposition, I wasn't crazy about the graphics that they pop up of the boxers.
Yeah, that was a little.
It didn't seem, it wasn't motivated. You know, it'd be different if he was a student, you know, and he was of boxers, and he knew stats and everything, and this was his how he sized everybody up by their stats. But it was just totally for the audience, and it kind of popped up for a few times and then went away, and you never really saw it. So it's kind of inconsistent, and it's just it almost seemed like an afterthought. Like the studio was like, well, nobody knows who these guys are, so we need to come up with a quick way to tag everybody and let people know that, hey, this is a good boxer.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what. One character I hate left the movie was it his half-brother in the Delphi gym? Did they allude to the fact that he was also Creed's son in L.A., where he goes in and asks him to train him, and he says he's not going to train him? You know what I'm talking about? I wish I knew that.
Oh, no, that was Duke's son.
Oh, okay. So I wish that I knew the actor's name. He plays Avon Barksdale on The Wire.
Yeah, he's from The Wire, right.
Yeah, and he's really good in this movie, and I love those early scenes with him when he walks into the gym and challenges the legit fighters.
I have to assume that's almost a setup for a sequel. I was talking to my buddy Jeremy, who's a big fan of the Rocky movies and a big fan of this movie, and he mentioned that he's got, like, borderline fanfic on where the franchise could go from here. He mentioned that he thinks that might be a setup. And also the character who was going to go for the championship and stole Creed's Mustang, you know, knocked him the F out.
Right, and the guy who got his jaw broken by Tomlin.
Exactly. He also seems like somebody that Creed might be facing in a future movie or something like that.
Well, if he's a real boxer, then recast him. I want Dolph Lundgren. I want, you know, Mr. T. I want freaking Carl Weathers, man. Like Carl Weathers, like he's the dude from Predator and Action Jackson. He's not a real boxer, but he convinced me that he could be the heavyweight champ of the world just in terms of the obvious athleticism that he showed off in those movies. I love the mythology that they continue to build around him just in terms of him being like arguably the greatest boxer of all time, and how they have that interlude with the Pardon the Interruption guys, Mike Wilbon and Tony Kornheiser, who are like debating whether or not, you know, Apollo Creed's infidelity will affect his legacy. I love that. That was a piece of realism that I bought just because I watched that show, and I thought that they recreated what that show actually is really well and incorporated the story. And it was a great, and again, another great character building moment. That, to me, that's, if you're going to do something like with anything, especially with a film that, and with a franchise where mythology is so important, then just make sure everything that you do is in service of these characters. And I just thought that there were little moments that got away from them that didn't do that. But again, for the most part, it all really worked for me. But let me ask you a question before we go.
Yeah,
I think that this is the best Rocky movie since Rocky IV, and I think it belongs on that list. And it's far and away better than the two that came after that. Where does this stand on the Rocky list for you? Because I know that's such a cherished list of yours.
Yeah, it's very high. I mean, I think it may be above 4 for me because of that first act of 4. It is pretty cheesy in a wonderful, wonderful way. But this movie is so tonally consistent all the way through. It's hard for me not to be enamored with it.
Yeah.
But I think right now I'm at 317, something like that. Yeah. So I'm pretty,
man.
I mean, these are all great movies.
I didn't hear two on that list, by the way.
Oh, I don't want to talk about two, man. I know you hold it really high. It's a tough one for me until it gets to the end. I'm not huge. It's a fantastic movie, but in terms of Rocky movies,
two is almost as good as one. It is close.
I know you're high on it, and I don't want to take that away from you, but I just don't. It's been a while since I've seen it, but I don't remember really being too crazy.
Well,
the montage of Rocky failing is, I don't know, for some reason that sticks out. I feel like it's kind of awkwardly. It's awkwardly stuck where it is, which is between the more pop version that we get in 3, which is just like pure blockbuster glee, and the more realistic kind of grit that we get in the first one.
I think the grit is there. I think it's arguably the grittiest one of all.
I think sometimes it's there, but then also sometimes it's going for Coca-Cola and Snickers bars, you know. I don't know. It just it if this seems like kind of a rough transition. But again, I like all these movies. I mean, 5 is my least favorite, but I still like it, you know, so.
Yeah, I think 6 is my least favorite, actually, but
yeah.
Last thing for me. So, you know, we have talked a little bit about, you know, why we care about awards and blah, blah, blah. There's chatter for Creed, surprisingly. I mean, people love this movie, and it's, you know, it's making money, and yeah, I think it's going to be in the conversation. And Rocky is famously an Oscar winner, right? I mean, it
absolutely,
won Best Picture,
yeah.
And, you know, the underdog wins again, and you know, so it's not out of the realm of possibility that it could happen again, you know, when there's precedent for it. So the biggest talk right now is that Sylvester Stallone may earn himself an Oscar nomination and possibly a win, you know, and perhaps to reward not only the performance, but I mean, it could be categorized as one of those sympathy Oscars where you reward the career instead of, you know, the performance specifically. Do you see that happening? Is that something you would want to happen? Does it deserve it?
Absolutely. I think it deserves to happen. I don't want to root against Mark Rylance at this point, because he's great in Bridge of Spies. But this wouldn't hurt my feelings because it is, he's putting in the work, you know, so we can tell quite clearly when Stallone is putting in the work and when he's slumming it, you know, and when he's, you know, posing in the mirror for a vanity project. You know, I'm not going to say he deserves an Oscar for the Expendables movies. his mascara stylist certainly does, but not him. But here he's in, you know, he's on board. I think, you know, if you're going to be cynical, you can say, well, of course he's on board. He wrote himself a cancer subplot and made himself, you know, a very sympathetic character. But
you're going to love Rocky no matter what.
Even, yeah, exactly. If that's cynical, that still doesn't work if he hadn't done the work ahead of time as his character, and if he wasn't doing the work on screen. If he does get nominated, I think the clear clip is him telling the doctor about Adrian's chemo. You know, I feel like that. It's so nicely done. It's
yeah,
so restrained. He could have gone full First Blood blubbering, you know, which I think is a great moment in that movie, but I feel like he totally could have broken down there, but he didn't because he knows he's playing Rocky Balboa, and Rocky Balboa doesn't melt down. He just takes it at face value. So I feel like that in the scene where he talks about how, you know, he is in the past and he points behind him and he says, like, those guys on the posters, and that totally feels like a moment that they found on the set,
yeah.
You know, where
yeah, yeah,
where
yeah.
It was like, oh, we're in this room, oh, I can use this, you know? And that,
yeah.
I feel like at his age, if he's in Expendables movies and he's still doing that kind of work on that level where it's still finding character moments like that, even if he's had 40 years to develop this character, I think that's totally earned and that's totally deserved, and it's a fantastic performance.
Yeah, and you know, that's a great point. And outside of my favorite little throwaway line that I mentioned earlier about the motorcycle, that's probably the best pure Rocky moment of this movie because – going back to the things I don't love about what Stallone is obviously doing with the character, instead of you know, making it this personification of the idea of Rocky, what he symbolizes, and hurling a bunch of yearbook quotes at Adonis, like Rocky in the past, like he doesn't let this huge moment, like he doesn't let that get to him. Like he's worried about how shiny his robe is, right? And like he makes a comment. He makes very simple comments that nobody else is thinking about in that moment. There's just a great simplicity to him, and I think that simplicity and that rears its head in the scene that you're talking about, and I think that is more of a reflection of Rocky's, say, intellectual evolution and where his experience comes into play and his wisdom comes into play more so than when he's saying these strange things that Rocky probably would never say to Adonis.
Well, I'll disagree with and say I feel like they're all kind of organic and from his experience. But I think there's all sorts of moments in that. And going back to Jeremy, I mean, the first thing after I texted him my reaction to the movie, the first thing he said was, "This had no business being as good as it is." And I feel like that's my big takeaway is,
well, that was before he saw it, right, that he said that?
I'm not sure if he's seen this movie yet. I think he's only seen the first and the fourth one. I'm joking, but they could have slapped, you know, Rocky: Creed 2 or whatever onto this and made plenty of money, made Rocky Balboa money, you know.
Well, we've talked so much about Stallone here and Rocky the franchise. We've barely said a word about Michael B. Jordan, whose movie this is, right? And
absolutely,
he's fantastic, and
he
is. He reinforces the fact that he has movie star potential, right?
Like he is a movie star.
He's on the level right now of like Chris Pratt, you know, and Chris Hemsworth and those guys. Where I mean, he has that thing, and it's great that he gets this movie and possibly a franchise to himself now. But I hope that this sort of propels him the same way that other blockbusters have propelled movie stars, you know, of the same caliber. I mean, he deserves it just as much. He carries this movie like with just no effort.
Yeah, I mean, I think clearly he and Coogler are the MVPs here. And as somebody that hasn't seen Fruitvale Station before, I think it's on Netflix, and I can't wait to watch it because he's a new favorite for me.
I hope the directing acting combo continues too, because again, that was like my biggest selling point, is that the team from Fruitvale Station was making this. I mean, hopefully this is a Scorsese De Niro Scorsese Leo combo of the same ilk. You know, like they obviously have great chemistry. They've made two really good movies so far.
Yeah, a Stallone Couture kind of thing. Well, on that note, I think we can end it. So thanks for talking to me about it. I'm sorry that you hated this movie, but, you know, maybe a second viewing will let you like it at least a little bit.
Yeah, I hope I hate it less. Christmas gift and my bitch so bad she on my Christmas list. Remember, I pray really, I wish for this. Thinking the crew with the maid and with the picket fence. I'm with some niggas that mad, we took a risk for this. So talking Lord knows that I repent for this. But Lord knows if I get pinned for this, I probably won't get home until I'm 56. They say, I don't know why they be guessing these suckers, but fuck, cause I am not feeling that shit. Different between me and most of these rappers, I'm talking about work that I'm really put in. Talking about pistols I put on my hip, and I'm talking about fires I really. For more from the Film Nerds, go to filmnerds.com and aspectradioshow.com.